Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in. Rick Santorum, huh? Rick Santorum will be parsed later on in the program tonight. More generally speaking, though, in a few minutes, I want to get to something that explains Rick Santorum and all these right-wingers, the right-wing id unzipped. Very interesting. Hey, we ought to start tonight with Prairie 2 right away. I always make him stand in line, and I'm sure he likes to hear his stuff on the air, so some nights he has to sit there for, you know, it's, oh my God, when's Malloy going to get to my essay? When? Okay. All right, Bruce. It's all fun and games until somebody gets terminated. Before I begin this, it's a rather short one tonight. Did you read the thing, it was in Sunday's paper or today's paper, about a machine on a single atom of phosphorus? Did you read about that? It's a transistor. Still a machine. Did you read about that? I read that. I'm sitting there going, what? I don't even understand this. Prairie 2 writes, mankind has been scared to death of the possibility that machines could think ever since the jack-in-the-box was invented. Today we're moving into an era where one might actually become concerned. Australian and American physicists just announced that they have succeeded in building a transistor out of a single atom of phosphorus. The significance of this isn't that it's tiny, but because they say that it makes quantum computing possible. Quantum computing. Now, quantum mechanics gets complicated, so I'll just hit the two big highlights. At the subatomic level, a particle exists simultaneously in all possible states. And the speed of light is not the speed limit under certain circumstances. Albert Einstein called this possibility spooky. And it is. Because a subatomic particle has multiple states, you could, in theory, build a transistor that is much smarter than the simple on-off kind that we have now. This would make them able to do really basic processes using a higher logic, more like the human brain, and do it with relatively few transistors. Basically, we're talking a supercomputer about the size of a pinpoint instead of filling a large room. The really spooky part is that subatomic particles can be linked, or what physicists call entangled. Once linked in this way, when one particle is made to change its charge, the other one, which doesn't need to be present, will change its corresponding charge instantaneously, no matter how far apart they are. No limit is known. Basically, this is faster than light communication. It's not just faster, it's instant. A computer constructed this way would run really, really fast. It would also be error-free, since there isn't any mechanical or electrical linkage, just the spooky kind. Now, this doesn't violate Einstein's speed of light rule, according to him, because he did the math, but I'm not clear exactly why it doesn't. All those sci-fi stories about thinking machines will be possible sometime in the future, possibly in the very near future. Turn the crank and hear the pretty music. It's just a harmless box. Prairie 2. Prairie 2 is getting very artistic in his writing, isn't he? Yeah. I mean, I like that. Also, I like that explanation of quantum physics. I have some very smart listeners. Thank God. And did you hear about this? A plant that was dead. Oh, this is going to cause a lot of hell. Ooh, this is going to make the religious right even more pissed off than they already are, the totalitarians. And boy, do I, this thing about the right-wing id unzipped is astonishing. I'll get to that in a minute. But you read about this. There's a little Arctic flower called the narrow-leafed campion. Little tiny Arctic flower. It died 32,000 years ago. But the fruit of this little plant was stored by, I'll call it an Arctic ground squirrel, 32,000 years ago, in the squirrel's burrow on the tundra of northeastern Siberia. And it laid there, permanently frozen, until it was excavated by scientists a few years ago. Do-do-do-do. And now the claim is being made by a couple of scientists. Svetlana Yashina and David Gilichinsky of the Russian Academy of Sciences Research Center. And they published in Tuesday's issue of the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences of the United States of America. That's where this report has been published. But this would be the oldest plant by far that has ever grown from ancient tissue. They've got the thing growing. The record right now is being held by a date palm grown from a seed that was about 2,000 years old that was recovered from an ancient fortress, the ancient fortress of Masada in Israel. Now, yes, many claims of extreme longevity like this have failed on closer examination. This one might. But the new claim is supported by a firm radiocarbon date. A similar avenue of inquiry, it says here, listen to the Times, into the deep past, the field of ancient DNA was at first discredited after claims of retrieving dinosaur DNA proved erroneous. Woo! But with improved methods, using this this process to obtain ancient DNA has produced spectacular results, like the total reconstruction of the Neanderthal genome. Okay, you with me?
Yes.
Well, I just wondered if this was the Mike Malloy show. We've had phosphorus atoms and ancient plant DNA, and I just wondered if you had anything about
I'm getting to that, but I got to kind of work into it. I mean the political thing in this country makes me literally sick. I don't think it's pollen that gets me to the point where I'm coughing
pollen.
So hard.
No, yeah,
I don't think
now it's pollen. It's Nat Geo Radio, folks. So
the Russian researchers,
it's Monday Weird Science Night.
The Russian researchers excavated ancient squirrel burrows exposed on the bank of the lower Kolyma River, an area thronged with mammoth and woolly rhinoceroses during the last ice age. And soon after being dug, these burrows were sealed with this little plant in it, buried under 125 feet of sediment, and permanently frozen at minus 7 degrees Celsius. Okay, you get the picture. Kathy's sarcasm, to the contrary, notwithstanding, you do get the picture here. Okay, this little squirrel-like creature, 32,000 years ago, buried this little nut under a whole bunch of permafrost, and there it stayed. Why do I bring this up? The reason I bring it up, Kathy, is because we have religious madness afoot in this country. Psychopathology of the highest order. 6,000 years ago, according to these freaks, there was nothing but the void. So here's something from 32,000 years ago. And I just love it when science comes up with this, because it kind of takes these religious freaks by the back of the head and smashes their face into a pie made out of science.
Now it's been 10,000 years. Man has cried a billion tears for what he never knew. Now man's reign is through. But through eternal night, the twinkling of starlight, so very far away, maybe it's only yesterday.
Loud, proud, progressive talk. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. So anyway, now picture it, and I want to see how sharp you are. Bridget already got the connection, but I want to see how sharp you are. Here's this 32,000-year-old narrow-leafed campion plant, a little Arctic flower. It has a little seed pod with it. It's been frozen all these years in the tundra. A couple of Russian scientists have they tried to work with just one of the seeds. It didn't work, so they have a different system. When they failed to germinate the campion seeds, they took cells from the seed placenta, the organ in the fruit that produces the seeds. They thawed out the cells and grew them in culture dishes into whole plants. The Russian team says it obtained a radiocarbon date of 31,800 years from seeds attached to the same placenta from which the living plants were propagated. Blah, 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 blah. Now, laugh, if you will, Miss Catherine, about Monday Night Weird Science. But how about the movie Ice Age? What's the running joke in that movie? Do you remember? The ancient squirrel with that acorn-like thing?
This was the entire point of the story.
That's the entire point of the story.
Prehistoric squirrel.
You've spent the whole weekend doing Girl Scout cookies. You need a break, right? Huh?
Oh my God! We pulled a wagon through little town today, and we actually sold 20 boxes.
Yeah, I know you did.
Off the side of the wagon with Molly banging on a tambourine. Well, going, I've got cookies. Yes, I do. I've got cookies just for you.
Yeah, but it wasn't so much the singing of the tambourine. It was little ragged pants that you had her in with little patches on the knees. Today there was no school, so Kathy dressed Molly up like a little ragamuffin. And off they went. You know, we have talked so many times on this program about the totalitarian mindset of people on the right wing. And you've also noticed that I don't call them conservatives anymore. They have gone so far to the right from the appellation conservative as to render the term meaningless. You know, I'll tell you, as a conservative, Barack Obama's a conservative. Bill Clinton's a conservative. These people on the political and religious right are insane. They are so far to the right that they're on the verge of falling off the flat earth that they probably still believe in. And we've talked time and time again, just in idle chatter on this program, in screaming and frothing on my part about religious crazy people and political crazy people. We've talked scientific research, scientific papers about what makes a person. Thomas Frank wrote the book, What's the Matter with Kansas? It's just... It's something that we have talked about so many times, because I can't understand how... I couldn't understand the Germans who followed Hitler. I couldn't understand the Russians who followed Stalin, or the Cambodians who followed Pol Pot, or the Americans who followed George W. Bush. I just can't understand what mechanism is at play when people don't just vote against their own best economic, spiritual, environmental well-being, but when they bare their teeth and act proud of it, when they walk into a polling place and vote for a candidate that is more or less telling these people, at least to an observer, I'm going to enact legislation if I get elected that's going to make your life even more miserable than it already is. Even less real freedom of choice, of thought, of movement. I'm going to do all these things to you, and you are going to vote me into office so I can do them to you. I mean, we've seen this over and over and over again. And trying to reach out to the right wing is madness. You can't reach through that thick insanity or pathology. Let's just call it pathology. You can't reach through that. Obama spent first three years of his presidency trying to reach through that wall of psychopathology. And, you know, little 25-cent radio programs like mine would sit back and say, Barack, don't do that! It's a waste of time! And other people with bigger megaphones than mine would say the same thing. I mean, this is insane. You can't reach people who are encased in psychopathology. You simply can't reach them. A physician might be able to, a psychiatrist. Maybe there's drugs to pry them loose. They're like those sea creatures that attach themselves to rocks, and you just can't get them off, no matter what you do. These ideas that get inside right-wingers' heads. We're going to talk about it when we come back. I found this to be very, very interesting. Stay with us.
Entering a flying monkey free zone, it's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. So continuing in the vein of science versus right-wing madness. Mike Lofgren is an author, essayist. He wrote a commentary for Truth Out some time ago entitled Goodbye to All That, Reflections of a GOP Operative Who Left the Cult. And apparently that commentary went viral. It had over 1 million unique views. Now, what Lofgren is addressing now is the word conservative. He points out that Romney used the word conservative 19 times at that CPAC conference of vermin in Washington just completed last week. And, excuse me, as Lofgren points out, the audience he used this word to appeal to was not conservative by any traditional definition. It was right wing. And despite the common American practice of using conservative and right-wing interchangeably, right-wing is not a synonym for conservative. In fact, it's not even a true variant of conservatism. Right-wingers have occasioned much recent comment. Their behavior in the Republican debates has caused even jaded observers to react, sort of like an Oxford Don stumbling upon a tribe of headhunting cannibals. In those debates, where the moderators did not enforce decorum, these right-wingers, the Republican base, behaved with a single lack of dignity. For a group that displays its supposed pro-life credentials like a neon sign, the biggest applause lines resulted from their hearing about executions or the prospect of someone dying without health insurance. Remember? Sure. So Lofgren asks, who are these people? What motivates them? And to answer, he says that you've got to leave the field of conventional political theory and enter the realm of psychopathology. There are three books that can serve as field guides to these, the farther shores of American politics, and the netherworld of the true believer, these right-wingers. Most estimates calculate the percentage of American voters who are religious fundamentalists at around 40%. In some key political contests, such as the Iowa caucuses, the percentage is closer to 60%. And because of their social cohesion, their ease of political mobilization, and their high election turnout, fundamentalists have political weight even beyond their raw numbers. An understanding of their leaders, their infrastructure, and their political goals is warranted. Max Blumenthal has done the work in his book entitled Republican Gomorrah, Inside the Movement That Shattered the Party. And Blumenthal investigates politicized fundamentalism and provides little bios of such movement luminaries as James Dobson, Tony Perkins, John Hagee, Ted Haggard. The reader will conclude that these authority figures and the flocks they command are driven by a binary, Manichaean vision of life and a hunger for conflict. Their minds appear to have no more give and take than that of a terrier staring down a rat hole. And in his book, Max Blumenthal examines the childhoods of these religious right celebrities and reveals a significant quotient of physical and mental abuse suffered at the hands of their parents. His analysis of the obvious sadomasochistic element in Mel Gibson films, films that are just fawned over by the right wing, is enough to give you the creeps. But the book is by no means a uniformly depressing read. The chapter titled Satan in a Porsche, about fundamentalist attempts to ban pornography, approaches slapstick. Now, according to the author, Max Blumenthal, the inner life of fundamentalist true believers is the farthest thing from that of a stuffy, proper goody-two-shoes. In fact, these people seem tormented by demons that those in the reality-based community scarcely experience. That may explain their extraordinary latitude in absolving their political and ecclesiastical heroes of their sins. You know, while most of us might regard George W. Bush as a dry drunk, resentful of his father, Newt Gingrich as a sociopathic serial adulterer, and Ted Haggard as a pathetic specimen in terminal denial, their followers on the right apparently believe that the greater the sin, the more impressive the salvation, so long as the magic words are uttered and the penitent sinner is washed in the blood of the Lamb. And this explains why people like Gingrich can attend so-called values voter forums, and both he and the audience manage to keep a straight face. I mean, this is a part that drives me crazy. Lofgren goes on, far from being a purpose-driven life, the existence of many true believers is a crisis-driven life that seeks release as Blumenthal asserts, in what he calls an escape from freedom. Absolutamente. An observer of the right-wing phenomenon must explain the paradox here of followers who would escape from freedom even as they incessantly invoke the word freedom as if it were a mantra. But freedom, so defined, does not mean ordinary civil liberties like the prohibition of illegal government searches and seizures, or the right of due process, or the right not to be tortured. No, 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 no. That's not what they mean by freedom. The hard right has never protested the de facto abrogation of much of the Bill of Rights during the last decade. In the right wing id, freedom is the emotional release that a hostile and psychologically repressed person feels when he's finally able to lash out at the objects of his resentment. Ah! You goddamn queers! That sort of thing. Freedom is his prerogative to rid himself of people who are different or who unsettle him. Freedom is merging into a like-minded herd. And right-wing alchemy transforms freedom into, that's right, authoritarianism. Bada-bing, bada-boom. Second book, Robert Altemeyer, a Canadian psychologist, has done extensive testing to isolate and describe the traits of the authoritarian personality. His results are distilled in his book, The Authoritarians. And he describes religious fundamentalists, the core of the right-wing Republican base, as follows, quote, "They are highly submissive to established authority, aggressive in the name of that authority, and conventional to the point of insisting everyone should behave as their authorities decide. They are fearful and self-righteous and have a lot of hostility in them that they readily direct toward various out-groups. They're easily incited, easily led, rather uninclined to think for themselves, largely impervious to facts and reason, and rely instead on social support to maintain their beliefs. They bring strong loyalty to their in-groups. They have thick-walled, highly compartmentalized minds. They use a lot of double standards in their judgments. They are surprisingly unprincipled at times and are often hypocrites." End quote. There are tens of millions of Americans who, although personally lacking the self-confidence or the ambition or the leadership qualities of authoritarian dominators like Gingrich or Sarah Palin, nevertheless, tens of millions of Americans empower these people to achieve their goals while finding psychological fulfillment in subordination to a cause. Altemeyer describes these persons as authoritarian followers. They're socially rigid, highly conventional, strongly intolerant, who, absent any self-directed goals, seek achievement and satisfaction by losing themselves in a movement greater than themselves. Would this be the time for a Sieg Heil? There's more when we come back. Stay with us.
talk radio right from the left. It's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. The piece is by Mike Lofgren, the right wing id unzipped. And he's trying to explain to people who don't already know this that conservatism died in this country a long time ago as a political force, and it's been replaced by right-wing politics. The two are not interchangeable. That's why one of the reasons you very seldom hear me use the word conservative on this program, but I use the word right-wing or neo-fascist or neoconservative, and that's what I'm talking about. And what Lofgren is explaining is the inability of these people to live their own lives. They have to be dictated to. This is psychopathology that gives rise to national moments of terror, whether it be the terror that succeeded the French Revolution, or the terror that occurred in this country after the Civil War, or the terror of Nazism, or the terror of the political terror caused by the starvation of millions in Soviet Russia. It just goes on and on and on. And he's talking about these people. They are socially rigid, highly conventional, strongly intolerant. One finds them overrepresented in reactionary political movements, fundamentalist sects, and leader cults, like, for example, Scientology. Yeah, I've never met a Scientologist in my life who had the ability to stand on his or her own 2 feet without, I don't know, turning toward California and making weird little squeaking noises. It's just unbelievable. They are the people who responded on cue when Bush's press secretary said after the 9/11 attacks that people had better watch what they say. Remember that? That was Ari the Liar, I believe. Watch. People better watch what they say. And the people that are being described here are the first to go, oh, oh, oh. Shh, 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 shh. Don't say anything. Or who approve of illegal surveillance because if you have nothing to hide, you have nothing to fear. Remember that? Or who, after months of news stories saying that no weapons of mass destruction had been found in Iraq, nevertheless believed that the weapons were found. Remember some of that? Oh, they were moved to Syria. Oh, they were hidden in caves. Oh, they were moved to Turkey. Oh, there's... the CIA got him. Now, going back to the Canadian writer, Altemeyer, he says probably... About 20 to 25% of the adult American population is so right-wing authoritarian, so scared, so self-righteous, so ill-informed, and so dogmatic that nothing you can say or do will change their minds, ever. They would march America into a dictatorship and probably feel that things had improved as a result. And they are so submissive to their leaders that they will believe and do virtually anything they are told. They are not going to let up, and they are not going away. Now, you and I know this, don't we? But Mike Lofgren is kind of encapsulating it all here for us. Now, as Lofgren points out, 20 to 25% is no majority, not enough to swing an election. Or it is enough to swing an election, especially since the authoritarian follower is more easily organized than the rest of the population. Think of the brown shirts. Think of the... think of any movement inside a totalitarian regime. Think of the Young Pioneers, the Hitler Youth, the Red Guards, and you have Republicans, you have conservatives, you have eventually right-wingers. As for Altemeyer's warning that such personality types, quote, are not going away, end quote, the rise of the Tea Party after 2008 showed that he was a better prognosticator than Max Blumenthal. Blumenthal thought the radical takeover of the Republican Party during the Bush presidency had, quote, shattered the party, end quote. Not so. Altmaier cites clinical data to show us how certain people score high on psychological tests measuring authoritarian traits, and that these high scores strongly correlate with right-wing political preferences. What Altmaier is lacking, though, is a satisfactory explanation as to why a significant percentage of human beings should develop these traits. Now, you can obtain some clues in Wilhelm Reich's The Mass Psychology of Fascism, written in 1933. And unfortunately, only obtainable in a stilted 1945 translation full of odd psychological jargon. And one doesn't have to agree with Reich's questionable later career path and personal eccentricities, and either you know what I'm talking about or you don't, to notice that his 1933 work is a perceptive analysis of the character of the authoritarian political movements that were rising in Europe. Anyone reading it then and taking it seriously could have predicted the new totalitarian regime's comprehensive repressiveness, extreme intolerance, and within a few years, nihilistic destructiveness. Now, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I'm going to finish this up because not that much more. But it's just so fascinating to me because here are people much smarter than I putting in coherent form what I've been foaming at the mouth about on this program for years, trying to understand this, trying as someone not educated in psychopathology, trying to understand, you know, me, trying to understand what is it about these people that they continue to do this. And no amount of light or truth or reason or understanding or compassion, none of it works. They are locked away. And they are so goddamn dangerous. More of this when we come back. Being sponsored by James Higgins, and in reference to, I think, last Thursday or Wednesday, he writes, "Thanks for playing You Don't Own Me as bumper music." Oh, on Thursday. Also, please no more cookies. I'm already getting 15 boxes. Thanks, James. Our sponsor for hour two. All right, what we've been talking about, and we have a little bit more to ground to cover here, is the right-wing id unzipped. This was at truthout.org on Valentine's Day, written by Mike Lofgren. And it is about the fact that conservatism, no matter how many times these right-wing political candidates use it, conservatism is not what they're talking about. They're talking about right-wing politics, which is leaves conservatism on the left, way on the left. Right-wing politics is a fascist kind of politics. It is respected by people who are unable, for whatever reason, by choice or by biology or by upbringing, by having the ability to think independently beaten out of them when they were children, but they're unable to think independently and unable to reason, unable to appreciate art or science or music. Unless it is martial music or church music or I mean religious music, because these totalitarian mindsets are found not just in Christianity or American politics, but they're found globally. And the question I've had for years is, why do Americans seem so willing to allow fascism and totalitarianism to slide very slowly yet inexorably into our system? It's something I can't understand. And At one time I came up with what I thought was a workable understanding at the time, because this has been driving me insane. And that is that the people who come to this country come so often from countries where a kind of totalitarianism, whether it's religious or political, has been forced upon them for generations. And I'm not sure why they come here. I think it's what... Robert Altmaier, Canadian psychologist, has explained in his book, The Authoritarians. They come here because they're seeking freedom. The freedom to actually be as crazy or pathological as they have to be without fear of being locked up or put away because of their craziness. I don't know. I can't think of any other reason why people in this country, and I'm only talking about this society, which is a nation of immigrants. We may be 2 or 3 or 10 generations removed, but unless we are indigenous people to this country, we are all from immigrant stock, all of us, white, black, brown. So why this fascist attitude that is just a silly millimeter below the surface of everything that we do? It's always there. And of course, capitalism loves that. But let me go back. Altmaier cites clinical data to show us, just repeat a paragraph here to bring you up to speed, to show us how certain people score high on psychological tests measuring authoritarian traits, and that these high scores strongly correlate with right-wing political preferences. And what Altmaier is lacking is a satisfactory explanation as to why a significant percentage of human beings should develop these traits. So, we get some clues in Wilhelm Reich's book, The Mass Psychology of Fascism. Now, I understand Reich went a little bit beyond the curve with his, what was it called, orgone boxes or whatever it was. But he had a powerful influence on mid-20th century thinking. Anyway, especially in this field. Reich appears to see fascism as the political manifestation of an authoritarian psychology. Who, then, are the authoritarians? This is what Reich says. Fascist mentality is the mentality of the subjugated little man who craves authority and rebels against it at the same time. It is not by accident that all fascist dictators stem from the milieu of the little reactionary man. The captains of industry and the feudal militarists make use of this social fact for their own purposes. A mechanistic authoritarian civilization only reaps, in the form of fascism, from the little suppressed man, what for hundreds of years it has sown in the masses of little suppressed individuals in the form of mysticism, top sergeant mentality, and automatism. Wilhelm Reich. Here again, Lofgren writes, we see the paradoxical nature of the authoritarian personality, rebelling against authority while hungering for it, exactly as the contemporary right wing fancies it is rebelling against big government while calling for intrusive social legislation and militarism. In other words, they rebelling. What big government is Rick Santorum rebelling against? While at the same time, calling for intrusive big government to the point now of ramming mechanical devices into the vaginas of women. You get it? Do you get this? I'm sure you do. And as Lofgren says, in the midst of dire economic circumstances, why do these authoritarians, these little men, and they can be men or women, why do they expend inordinate energy brooding over contraception, abortion, abstinence education, gay marriage, and so forth, and attempt to transform their obsessions into law? Here's an answer, maybe, from Wilhelm Reich. Quote, "The formation of the authoritarian structure takes place through the anchoring of sexual inhibition and sexual anxiety. The result of this process is fear of freedom and a conservative, reactionary mentality. Sexual repression aids political reaction not only through this process, which makes the mass individual passive and unpolitical, but also by creating in his structure an interest in actively supporting the authoritarian order. The suppression of natural sexual gratification leads to various kinds of substitute gratifications. Natural aggression, for example, becomes brutal sadism, which then is an essential mass psychological factor in imperialistic wars. Partial drowning, torture, rendition. You get it? And think for a moment, if you will, stepping away from Lofgren's article, of the absolute, almost, what's the word I'm looking for? Total focus these right-wingers have on sex, on somebody else's sex. Is it libertine sex? Is it gay sex? Is it heterosex outside of marriage? Is it buggering little boys? Is it buggering little girls? I mean, time after time after time, the reports flow in anytime you want to see them. The most sexually repressive areas of the country are the ones where the most violent sexual crimes occur. And those areas are the ones dominated by this crazed, frothing, mouth-breathing Christianity. The ones who profess the most ardent Christianity, those parts of the country, are the ones where divorce rates are highest, murder rates are highest, incest is highest, teen pregnancy is highest, drug abuse is highest, methamphetamine production is highest. Why is that? Unless what Lofgren is writing about here is abso-goddamn-lutely true. More when we come back.
America, one flying monkey at a time. Here's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. The right-wing id unzipped, as the article is written by Mike Lofgren. It's at Truth Out on February 14th, last week. And Lofgren uses a couple of books. Wilhelm Reich's The Mass Psychology of Fascism. Robert Altmaier, his book, The Authoritarians. And he also references the book by, what's his name? What's the Matter with Kansas? It'll come to me in a second. As to try to explain what to me has been truly the unexplainable. And that is, what is the psychology of people who respond to politicians like a Rick Santorum, or a Gingrich, or to a lesser degree even poor old miserable Mitt Romney? a Sarah Palin? Why do they respond to truly crazed Jesus killers like Pastor Hagee and the rest of these monsters on the Christian right? You know, just why? So some answers here. The article by Lofgren continues. Here again, we see the paradoxical nature of the authoritarian personality, rebelling against authority while hungering for it. Exactly as the contemporary right wing fancies, it is rebelling against big government while calling for intrusive social legislation and militarism. So, those mysteries to me, they're mysteries. As Reich points out, natural aggression becomes brutal sadism, which then is an essential mass psychological factor in imperialistic wars. And he was, you know, he was around at that time of the 20th century where he could write about the rise of the black shirts in Italy and the brown shirts in Germany. Going on with Lofgren's article, and he's almost finished. According to Reich, a patriarchal, sexually repressive family life, reinforced by strict and punitive religious dogma, is the factory of the reactionary political order. That's where it's made. A patriarchal, are you listening? Sexually repressive family life, reinforced by strict and punitive religious dogma. Is there anything more punitive in religious dogma as it's currently practiced than fundamentalist Christianity? I mean, these sons of bitches will tell you not just that you're condemned, you're a bastard, go away, banish you from the tribe, but they will take what they consider to be your immortal soul and condemn it to everlasting torture. Jesus Christ! What kind of a sick structure is that? But there it is. A patriarchal, sexually repressive family life reinforced by strict and punitive religious dogma is the factory of a reactionary political order. Hence, the right wing's ongoing attempts to erase the separation of church and state. Its crusade against Planned Parenthood. Its strange obsession with gay people. Consider the following political platform, which sounds almost as if it were taken from a speech by Rick Santorum. You ready? Quote, "The preservation of the family with many children is a matter of biological concept and national feeling. The family with many children must be preserved because it is a highly valuable, indispensable part of the nation. Valuable and indispensable not only because it alone guarantees the maintenance of the population in the future, but because it is the strongest basis of national morality and national culture. The preservation of this family form is a necessity of national and cultural politics. This concept is strictly at variance with the demands for an abolition of paragraph 218. You'll get it in a minute. It considers unborn life as sacrosanct. For the legalization of abortion is at variance with the function of the family, which is to produce children and would lead to the definite destruction of the family with many children." End quote. Paragraph 218 is the right to abortion. Where did this appear? This appeared on October 14th, 1931, in the Volkische Beobachter. I'm mispronouncing it, but it was the official Nazi newspaper for about 25 years. As Altemeyer warns, they are not going away, these right-wingers. Certain psychological constructs and the political expressions they give rise to persist over time and across cultures. Now, when we come back, a couple of the comments that you've emailed in since I started reading this at the beginning of the program. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
Excuse me, 25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by James Higgins. Thank you, James. He writes, thanks for playing You Don't Own Me the other night as bumper music. And please, no more cookies. Already getting 15 boxes. Well, James, that's not enough.
They're free.
Yeah, they're free, for God's sake. Yeah, we're only going to run that commercial a couple more times. I think Molly has reached her goal. Molly and her troop have reached their goal. Thanks to everybody that participated in that, by the way. We do appreciate it. We still have some boxes, yes. And we're still going to give away free if you sponsor an hour. But just so you know, she made it. She and her troop made it. And not a little bit of that came from you folks, so thank you very much. Now, a couple of people email me. Mike Lofgren, is he the Republican operative? He used to be, yes. He fled the cult. Much like, who wrote the guy that started Media Matters? He wrote, David Brock. Blinded by the Right. That was the book. Thank you, Kathy. Brock was the same way. He had been a member of that cult, the right-wing cult in this country, for the longest time. And this does happen to people. They can escape. Some cults refuse to allow people to escape. They would rather see them dead. Scientology is one of those cults. Nazism was one of those cults. Fundamentalist Christianity, fundamentalist Islam. If you give up your religious beliefs and are near a group of fundamentalist Islamists, they'll kill your ass. So Scientology, and which is one of these hardcore mad religions anyway. And don't, please, you Scientologists listen to the program on the West Coast, don't email me. I really don't care about your goddamn emails, okay? You're sick. Your philosophy is sick. Your cult leader before he died was sick in the head completely. So stay away from my email account, okay? Thank you very much. Now, getting back to this, the right wing id unzipped. That has always been, and I know it has been for a lot of people listening to this program, one of the fundamental unanswerable questions. Why do these people continue to do this? Why don't they see the light? Well, they're blind, very simply put. There is no way. If you went up to them with a goddamn sun in your hand and propped their eyes open, a la what's his name in the Clockwork Orange, Alex in Clockwork Orange, and stuck the sun in their face, the bastards would still be blind. So don't even try. That's why I said long ago, remember, I don't want right-wingers to call me. I don't care what you have to say. You're insane. You're sick. I feel sorry for you. Go get well. You can escape the cult. There are well-known people who have escaped the cult. And once you do that, then call. We'll chat. But you, if you're a regular listener to this program, you've heard these people over the years, 25 years in this business, and as short a period of time ago as 6 or 7 years ago, I would still allow them to come on my program and try to debate them, try until finally I just got the point. This is insane. And usually wound up just calling them sons of bitches and their mammies or some sons of bitches and hanging up on them, because I cannot handle that kind of weirdness. Hunter Thompson notwithstanding, I just can't handle that kind of weirdness. I really can't. Especially when I know that it is impenetrable. You cannot get through that weirdness and try to rescue these poor devils. The only way that they can rescue is if they rescue themselves. The only way they can be saved is if they rescue themselves. If they step out of that thicket, come away from that crazy Christian fundamentalism or Muslim or Jewish or whatever it is, and not just the religious fundamentalism, but the political fundamentalism, the right-wing craziness, the black shirt, brown shirt, a little red book, young pioneer, Nazi youth idea. If they step away from it, that's the only way. The only way. That's why I don't waste time. And that's why, you know, when Obama lost his ass, so to speak, in the off term elections, And I came up with that crazy idea. Remember, Obama ought to step up and say, okay, I already made history. I'm going to be a one-term president, and I'm going to kick you bastards' asses. I am going to propose every single kind of legislation, yada, yada, yada. And, of course, that's not Obama style. And look at, you know, I don't like his policies, some of them. Some of them I do like. But I don't like a huge chunk of what Obama has done and continues to do, continuing the Bush policies. Continuing to be a corporatist, a la Bill Clinton. But the charges leveled against him by the right wing, take a look at how sick and degenerate and weird and crazy they are. They don't go after him, as Lofgren pointed out in the article, they don't go after people for their abrogation of the Bill of Rights. You know, nobody on the right is screaming about drone attacks authorized by Obama. They love that stuff. They want more drone attacks. They want drone attacks in downtown goddamn Chicago. These right wingers. So it's almost like being forced to defend Obama against this pack of baying, frothing, rabid dogs that is the right wing. From Prairie 2. Fundamentalists, onward through the valley of death. Oh, okay, Alfred Lord Tennyson referenced right away. And I know that because it was my mother's favorite poet. I don't know why. Anyway, he writes, fundamentalist voters can be thought of as light cavalry, much more powerful than their numbers or weapons would suggest. However, when their orders come from somebody truly stupid, the outcome is much different. The charge of the light brigade, for example. The Republicans are now, only now, starting to grasp that Obama holds the high ground and has all the cannons. Yet they keep coming. Half a league onward. All in the valley of death, rode the 600. Forward, the Light Brigade! Charge for the guns, he said. Into the valley of death, rode the 600. Yeah, you know that. Remember in high school. Charge of the Light Brigade. Prairie 2 adds a P.S. The authoritarian follower only becomes a problem when they have somebody to follow. Normally, they just cluster in little groups and are relatively harmless. Just the occasional lynching and such. They really become a problem when the rich and powerful find them to be useful idiots. The black shirts of Italy, the brown shirts of Germany were funded by bales of Wall Street money. That's right. There is congressional testimony on file, part of the Smedley-Butler hearings, to back this up. In their natural state, the authoritarian follower is just the village bully. That's right. It's when somebody can figure out how to tap into that, like a Hitler, like a Santorum, like a Cheney wasn't that manipulative. Cheney was just a two-bit goddamn punk thief. But when you find somebody who can do that, like Mussolini, look at those old films of Mussolini strutting in his Italian Republican outfit. Look at Franco, Francisco Franco. Look at fascism in Spain. Look at these strutting, goose-stepping psychopaths. And then look at the wild adulation from the authoritarian followers. Ready to, quoting Tennyson, ready to ride half a league, keep going, into the valley of death. Die! For the leader. It's madness. It's not patriotism. It's madness. Look at the Roman legions, or not the Roman legion, the Roman Catholic legions, who were willing to do the same, willing to butcher and slaughter and kill and murder for this crazed, bloodthirsty God of theirs. Ah! Dan in California writes, Mike, about 15 years ago, some friends and I began to wonder whether the human species, Homo sapiens, had split into two distinct species of animal. Those humans on each side of the political spectrum continue to have the same morphology, but the brain function of those on the right is quite different. They will opt for less human rights and a lower quality of life in exchange for expanded lizard brain functions such as gun rights or extremely illogical fighting stances against imaginary threats to other imaginary rights. They're going to force us all to hire homosexual preachers. They're coming. They're coming. I just added that. Dan goes on, the authoritarian mindset and the retrograde emotional gut feelings of these offshoots of humanity is so remarkable that we can no longer think of them as our fellow humans. But we must be kind to them. Dan in California. That is so true. How many times have we on this program and you not involved in this program had that thought to yourself? Who are these people? Where do they come from? What the hell? We breathe the same air. We live in the same state. We have the same overarching entertainment venues. How could they be so different? Well, Dan may have come up with the answer.
Do it for you. It's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. Next hour, we're going to take a close look at Rick Santorum, who has been flitting around in and out of Georgia churches and not so public meeting places over the weekend. And some of the craziness he said.
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about the mating habits of eukaryotic bacteria.
No, some other time, Gabby. James Higgins has been the sponsor of this hour. Thanks, James. I already said this, didn't I? Thanks for playing You Don't Own Me as bumper music on Thursday. Also, please, no more cookies. Already getting 15 boxes. And you're going to love every single one of them. I promise. A couple more emails about what we've been talking about from Roz in Canada. She writes regarding the psychopaths that we were talking about, Altemeyer was talking about. And I said that, you know, they have no appreciation of anything that is truly artistic. They're incapable. As a matter of fact, art is threatening, very threatening. As a good artist is supposed to be. Now, it doesn't necessarily threaten the viewer, but it's a threat to something. Anyway, as Roz says, they love institutionalized music, Mike. They cannot function alone. They need the safety and strength of a group. What sorry people these right-wing types are. A shame, really. I don't understand this. In Canada, we are made up of many nationalities, and we're also free, but we aren't the scared, paranoid types that seem to go over the states. They see either communists, socialists, or Muslim terrorists behind every bush, Roz. Well, your population is what? What's the population of Canada? Is it 30 million yet? I'm sorry if I'm being very, very stupid here, but doesn't Canada have about a tenth the population of the United States? I don't know. If that's true or close to being true, I think that's the answer, Roz. When you have the kind of enormous numbers, the population that we have here, it's easy for the psychopathological types to meld or blend or disappear into the crowd. Now, if you've been an attentive listener to the program these first couple of hours, you have close at hand a pencil or something to write with, because I want to give you a couple of information. First of all, Altemeyer's book, The Authoritarians, that we quoted from tonight, that book is online as a free ebook. Albert has written to me here. It is free. And you ought to take a look at it. It's an easy Google search. You just type in Altemeyer, 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 and authoritarians. Those are your search words. Altemeyer, Altemeyer, and authoritarians. The book is free. It's right there. It'll come to you in a PDF file. You should get this, truly, and read it. Now, to use your pencil, Carla in Minneapolis writes, Mike, I'm listening to your Monday broadcast of The Origins and Nature of Fascism, and the following books, in my opinion, are the most excellent sources for researching the topic. Number one is a book by Eric Fromm that you may have read in your college-level psychology or sociology classes, entitled The Anatomy of Human Destructiveness. Did you read that one, Kathy? Eric Fromm, The Anatomy of Human Destructiveness. The second one is by Claudia Kunz, K-O-O-N-Z. It's titled Mothers in the Fatherland, Women, the Family, and Nazi Politics. Claudia Kunz, K-O-O-N-Z. Mothers in the Fatherland, Women, the Family, and Nazi Politics. The third, of course, is the standby by Hannah Arendt, The Origins of Totalitarianism, which I'm sure a lot of the listeners of this program have read. But Hannah Arendt's The Origins of Totalitarianism. And then the one by Bob Altemeyer, Enemies of Freedom, Understanding Right-Wing Authoritarianism. So, Carla adds, Eric Fromm's many books on this and related topics especially are indispensable reading, which is very true. So let me give it to you one more time. Eric Fromm's book, The Anatomy of Human Destructiveness. And then you have the book by Claudia Kunz entitled Mothers in the Fatherland, Women, the Family, and Nazi Politics. And then Hannah Arendt's book, The Origins of Totalitarianism. And Bob Altemeyer's book, Enemies of Freedom, Understanding Right-Wing Authoritarianism. And the Authoritarians, I think that's the same book. Yeah, that one is available free online. Just Google Altemeyer and Authoritarians as your search words, and they will both come up. The explanations provided by the people who understand this type of mindset do help me. I don't know if they help you. I'm sure they do. If this is something that just sticks in you and you can't get past it, why people continue to do this? Why people continue to support authoritarian, a hard right political and religious brutality. Man, it makes you almost scared to leave the house in the morning and go get a loaf of bread, doesn't it? All right, stick around. A fun hour about Rick Santorum, and I don't think I'm going to scream at all. Coming up, I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. The Republican primary season, of course, has gone from politically crazy to religiously insane. Have you noticed that? Have you noticed the Santorum? I mean, there's not even a pretense any longer of pretending like Santorum is running on some sort of political platform to to become president, el presidente de los Estados Unidos. He doesn't even pretend anymore. It's all religion. It's all Christer kind of religion, the crazy kind of religion. You know, stuff women back into their crawl space, treat children the way Leviticus tells you to treat children, and march onward and upward to bloody Armageddon or something. I don't know. This guy, I never paid all that much attention to Santorum. Who did? I mean, he's a freak. He's a freak that brings a corpse home for his children to fondle and touch and kiss. I mean, that to me is really out there. I mean, come on. And he still insists. He just absolutely insists that this was a live birth that he and his wife had. And then the baby died 2 days later, which is just simply and purely a lie. And it's not a lie because I say it's a lie. It's a lie because that's not the way it happened. But that's a whole different, you know, a different wrinkle and corner of Rick Santorum's incredibly, incredibly deep weirdness. I mean, it's one thing to be, religious. It's one thing to be a Christian. That's bad enough. It's worse to be a Catholic. It is extreme to be whatever the hell he is, Santorum is. I've never seen anyone as religiously nuts as this guy. And not only is he religiously insane, like a lot of people who are religiously insane, he attacks other people's religions. This is what I've been talking about for a couple of years. This is why religion is so filthy and destructive and mean-spirited and anti-life. If you don't believe the way Rick Santorum believes, you're subhuman. It's that simple. And his evidence? Okay, evidence. The way he talks about Obama's religion. You know, I'm so sick of these Republican scum and their dog whistle comments that are only heard by these religious right crazy people. He had a rally here in not far from the Malloy compound in North Georgia over the weekend. In Cumming, Georgia. I was in Cumming, Georgia in 84, 85, 86. That was when Cumming, Georgia, for Scythe County, was one of the whitest counties, racially speaking, in America. And the threats against people of color was just astonishing. This is before the heavy influx of Latinos into North Georgia for the chicken slaughtering business and farming and construction. This is before the big construction boom just was starting to take off in the metro Atlanta area 25 years ago. And for Scythe County, Cumming, Georgia was almost pure white, lily white. It was fairly still kind of rural, small towns. If you saw Cumming, Georgia now, you'd lose your mind. I mean, it looks like something you'd find in Long Island. But anyway, I can remember going to Cumming, Georgia for a massive civil rights march led by Hosea Williams and Coretta Scott King and some other people. And there were 25,000 of us on the road. There were Kluxers out. There was National Guard. There were state police. It was just unbelievably tense. I was working for WSB Radio at the time, and one of my friends there was a reporter, a black guy. He was going to go up to Cumming, Georgia by himself in an unmarked car, and I said, you're crazy. He wasn't from here. He was from Buffalo or something. I said, no. You need to have a white boy with you. You've got to have one thing about if you're black in the South. I'm only talking 25 years ago. You've got to have a white boy. You must have one. If you don't have a white boy, you're in trouble. So he kind of looked at me like, you know, I've heard that expression. I don't know what it means. I said, you've got to pair up with a white guy. Come on, I'll be your partner. I'll be your white boy, huh? I said, I'll be your white boy. Don't worry about it. So off we went. And I can't tell you how many times that day my friend was called the N-word over and over and over again, even though he was clearly marked as press. Didn't make any difference, especially because he was clearly marked as a media rep, whereas I wasn't. I went in disguise, you know. But the whole reason for telling that is that for Scythe County, coming Georgia, they've kind of shifted now from racial insanity to religious insanity. There are we've got friends in coming right now in Forsyth County, good friends who have a place up in North Carolina. We spend a lot of time and we'll talk with Chuck and Ann about the craziness of the people who surround them. And Chuck and Ann have lived up there for a long time. No, they're not. They're not. They're white, but they're not like that. So Rick Santorum goes to Cumming, Georgia. Huge, one of these huge churches. 5,000-7,000 people. That's not a church. That's a factory. That's a slaughterhouse. That's a meat market. That's a, I don't know what the hell it is, but it's not a church. Even Jesus himself would have taken that place and ripped it to pieces with his bare hands. He would have. He would have set it on fire. You know what Jesus said about church? You know, about prayer. First of all, don't pray publicly, you hypocrite. Secondly, I get two or three people together and talk about my Father. That's my church. But Christians don't do that anymore. Christians are lying, sneaking, slimy bastards for the most part. I'm not talking about that 1/1,000 of 1% who still maintain a belief in the teachings of their Messiah and still live it and act it. I'm not talking about you if that's how you practice your Christian faith. I'm talking about the monstrous majority of Christians who are hypocrites, liars, thieves, sneaks, cheats, death dealers, just rotten to the core. That's what I'm talking about here. That's who Rick Santorum appeals to. That's what Rick Santorum is. So he goes to Cumming, Georgia over this weekend and talks again. Here we go again about Obama's phony theology. You know, there's the dog whistle. Tweet. Obama's not really a Christian. Tweet. And if you're not really a Christian to a fundamentalist Christian, then you deserve to die. You go to hell. You think fundamentalist Muslims will put you to the sword? Oh, for heaven's sake, wake up and smell the blood and gore. There is no bloodier organization, more murderous organization on the face of the earth than organized Christianity of the fundamentalist stripe. It will grind you into dust. So there he is. There's Rick. Doubling down on what he said about Obama this and health care is an attempt to eliminate the disabled. He said this. He said this! It's incredible! On CBS's Face the Nation. He defended his claims that prenatal testing is a cause of abortions. A cause! You go get prenatal testing in order to have an abortion or something. This is insanity. This is crazy. People get prenatal testing so they can find out the condition of the fetus at a time when they can find out the condition of the fetus. And if the condition of the fetus is such, since it is not a human being at the time, since it is not a living, viable creature, parents can make a decision whether or not to terminate the pregnancy. Not in Rick Santorum world. Not there at all. A little bit more on this crazy bastard when we come back. Stay with us.
the microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
Set it up. That's me in the corner. That's me in the spot.
21 past the hour. So, no attempt whatsoever any longer by Rick Santorum to pretend like he's a political candidate. He is not a political candidate. He's no more of a political candidate than the Pope runs a corporation. Wait a minute, what am I saying? Oh, never mind, forget that analogy. Rick Santorum is using religion the way it is intended to be used. Now, understand that. He's using religion the way it's intended to be used, as a weapon, as something to demean someone else, as something to set someone else up for slaughter, in this case, political slaughter. He's using religion the way humanists have always warned that religion ultimately is used as a weapon, as a murder machine, as a way of eliminating the other. As a way of getting subscribers to religion to give up their lives to eliminate the other. Has nothing to do with the glory of God, has nothing to do with their avatars and their saviors and their sons and daughters of God. Has to do strictly with power. Strictly. And that's what Rick Santorum is doing. So anyone who entertains any doubts now as to the ownership of the Republican Party, it's really, even though you have billionaires contributing, very few of whom are actual Christians, like the Santorum Gingrich type, this is a blood sport to them. It's just blood sport. Throw the money on the floor and watch the Christians stumble and rip and tear each other to get to the money so they can rip and tear each other to get elected. Unbelievable political process we got here, huh? In a speech to Tea Party thugs Saturday in Columbus, Santorum said that Obama's politics are based in, quote, some phony theology, end quote. And then he went on to clarify. He said, quote, it's not about you. It's not about your quality of life. It's not about your jobs. It's about some phony ideal, some phony theology. Oh, not a theology based on the Bible, a different theology, end quote. I mean, listen to those words. This is a political, or should be, a political contest to see who is going to represent this sick, degenerate Republican. Well, I guess I just answered my own question. Since it is a political party that is sick and is degenerate, of course, the sickest and most degenerate will be the nominee. That's kind of a given, right? But that was over the top that Bob Schieffer began his interview on Sunday with Rick Santorum by saying, what in the world were you talking about? You know, when Santorum made that statement about Obama is his whole administration, his whole idea is based on some phony theology. And Santorum, being the lying, stinking religionist that he is, this is where they're all the same. All the same. When they make comments and then they're questioned by someone who allegedly is disinterested in the radical theology being put out there by the candidate, i.e. Bob Schieffer, when they're questioned by Bob Schieffer, what were you talking about? Santorum answers, oh, well, I was talking about the radical environmentalists. He said, I think that's a phony ideal that man should protect the earth rather than, here comes the Bible talk again, steward its resources. What the hell are you talking about? Oh, that's right. That's from, what, is that from Genesis? He said, I think this is a phony ideal. I don't believe that's what we're here to do. We're not here to serve the earth. That is not the objective. Man is the objective. Oh, my God. We're not here to serve the body. We're here to serve the virus that is eating the body alive, is what Santorum is saying. This is a degenerate, sick bastard. This really is. This is a criminal. This is a kind of criminal that they hold war crimes trials for. Because he puts first his corrupted, filthy religious beliefs. And somewhere down the list, he constructs a list, somewhere down near the bottom of the list, is the environment that we all have to live in. This is Rick Santorum. And does it surprise you that this is the slime that has risen to the top of this bowl of filth that is the Republican nominating process? Does that surprise you? Well, Truth Seeker, it shouldn't. There's more when we come back. Stay with us.
Everywhere. I do not like them on my station. I do not like them in my nation. It's more Mike Malloy.
Life is funny. Skies are sunny. Bees made honey.
25 before the hour. You know, when you've been in this business as long as I have, you see a whole parade of crazy people come and they go. They come and they go. Whether they're on a talk radio like this sick son of a bitch, Glenn Beck, or talk television like O'Reilly, or political half-wits like Gingrich, and that, but this religious leaders, I don't care who they are, business leaders like this Adelson, who is being investigated for all sorts of fraud and corruption, and he is Newt Gingrich's angel. Adelson, who would put Israel first before anything else, including the United States, when it comes to death and destruction. It's amazing the parade of goofs, monsters, lunatics that walk across the stage, that as a talk show host, you have almost an obligation to comment on. But this Rick Santorum really, really is astonishing. Now, I've told you a few things that he said now that he is the next front runner. You know, I mean, it's just a whole list. You thought Michelle Bachmann was bad. Bachmann was just crazy. Santorum is insane. Mad. So, among other things, he said that... On Saturday, I believe when he was in Columbus, Ohio, he said that health insurance plans should not cover prenatal testing because prenatal testing is the cause of abortion. He also said that what he calls government-run public education, government-run. Well, that makes you think the Soviet Union does it. This is what this slob Neil Bortz talks about here in the Atlanta area and has talked about for years. Government-run schools. I mean, it's such a display of their parochialism and their ignorance when they make a statement like that. But anyway, government-run public education, Santorum says, is anachronistic. What he would rather have is church-run education, which is the way it started out, right? He wants the churches to run education. He wants homeschooling. Now, either he doesn't understand the word anachronistic, or he's using another one of these dog whistle terms that he knows his followers don't understand. What is more of an out of time, out of place idea than homeschooling? Now, I know a lot of people on the left homeschool, a lot of people on the religious right crazy homeschool. Well, then have at it. But the vast majority of us believes in public education. It's not government-run education. Decisions are made on a state and county level by people elected by the people, you dumb bastards. What is that, Santorum? That's not government-run. That's people-run. Now, every once in a while, you have some freakish program like No Child Left Behind or Race to the Top put in place by a current president and his immediate predecessor that are stupid and make no sense whatsoever. But eventually, the people come out of the ether and realize how stupid and senseless it is, and they kick it to the curb. Which is what we've started doing now with No Child Left Behind and this Race to the Top crap. But these are not government-run education systems. Now, the people on the state school boards can be religious crazy people, the kind that Rick Santorum likes to align himself with, i.e. take a look at Texas, take a look at Kansas, take a look at Arizona, take a look at Oklahoma. Go right down the list of the states whose state school boards are populated by these Christer freaks who want to do away with all science, do away with all social studies, all history, and replace it with the book of Leviticus and Genesis and Numbers and Deuteronomy. Too bad they don't teach the Song of Solomon. Thy breasts are like white doves. No, that would be too much pleasure. Prenatal testing ends up in more abortions and therefore less care that has to be done because we cull the ranks of the disabled in our society. Listen to this son of a bitch. This is what Rick Santorum told the Ohio Christian Alliance Conference, that we cull the ranks of the disabled in our society. Now, what kind of an image does that bring up? A Nazi image, doesn't it? I mean, you can't help it. You can't help it. Well, let's get all the disabled people out here in the village square, now machine gun them and burn their bodies. That's what Santorum is saying that the Affordable Health Care Act provides, is mass murder of people who are disabled. I don't care what his alleged intent was. I don't care how he goes back and says to Bob Schieffer, "Oh, ha, 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 I wasn't talking about his religion when I said his religion is garbage." Well, how could you misunderstand that? So here it is again, the Christian craziness that now passes for political discourse in this dying political system that we have. Now, on the other hand, thank God it's dying. Maybe this time we will replace it with something that makes sense. Maybe we have to go through these death throes of this religious craziness before we finally get to the point where we cull these monsters from the herd. But to say that free prenatal, not paid prenatal, say I guess he means if you pay for prenatal testing, you're not culling the herd. Because he specifically says free prenatal testing ends up in abortion and therefore less care has to be done. What does that sentence mean? Now, this is the same kind of punk bastard who would do nothing to assist a family. Nothing. That has a special needs child, that takes extra medical care, extra educational care, extra home nursing care, extra care so the parents can work to afford all this. This rancid bastard, Rick Santorum, on the one hand, talks about prenatal testing causes abortion and is in effect culling the disabled from the herd. He has the balls to say that. But his record indicates that he would never have done and never did anything to assist families who might decide not to abort a fetus that they understand they can't care for if it is born, if it becomes alive, if it becomes a human being, which, when it's a fetus, it is not. It is a parasite. But this is what people like Santorum do. They set up this cognitive dissonance in their heads, in the heads of the people who follow them, specifically to cause this kind of existential confusion. Okay, I'm pregnant. I want to have a healthy baby. There are tests to determine if I'm going to have a healthy baby. I will take the test. Oops, the test says not only am I not going to have a healthy baby, but if I carry this pregnancy to term, I am going to have to deal with, yes, I, because there are no support systems in the United States of, by God, America. There are no support systems in Christian America other than, well, go to the church. I am going to have to take care of a child if I carry this fetus to term, if I continue this creative process that I'm involved in. I'm going to have to take care of this child until I die. And then who will take care of this child? No, pass. I think I'll get an abortion because I'm not doing anything right now except eliminating a parasitic clump of cells inside of me that may or may not turn out to be a human being. Oh, my God, Malloy, what did you just say? How could you say such an un-Jesus-like thing? How could you be so utilitarian? How could you do it? How indeed? Free prenatal testing is how we call the ranks of the disabled in our society, Rick Santorum said to the Ohio Christian Alliance Conference over the weekend. What the hell has happened to our political system?
I believe in gun control. I've got all my guns under my control. I don't need security. I've got a Colt 45 in here with me. I'll scare off intruders in my fatigues, black jackets, and army boots. My neck is red, my collar blue. I like it that way. I don't hear liberals talking to me. I don't see things their way.
Ten before the hour. Free prenatal testing causes abortions, and that's how we cull the ranks of the disabled in our society. Bob Schieffer then asked Santorum about that claim about prenatal testing leading to more abortions. Santorum insisted that it was a fact. What if it is? What does that have to do with a political system? What does that have to do with how to manage a declining empire? And what is it any business of Rick Santorum's or the state? He talks about government-run school systems as if they were Hitlerian or Stalinesque, and yet he feels compelled to make statements about a private decision by a woman, a physician, the woman's partner, and a woman's personal sense of ethical conduct over the course of her life. And Santorum wants to butt his ass into that because he has a right to. Does he have a right to butt his ass into a decision by a man to eat erectile dysfunction pills? Does he have a right to butt his ass into the decision by a man to have a vasectomy? Does he have a right to butt his ass into a decision by a man to have his prostate checked? No. He's talking about crawling up inside a woman's womb to take a look at the interior and see what should or should not be done. And in his case, look around in the womb, have a forced vaginal sonogram, but if you find something there that simply by any definition is not going to turn out to be a human being, that's God's will. Wow. Santorum said to Bob Schieffer, quote, we're talking about specifically prenatal testing and specifically amniocentesis, which is a procedure that actually creates a risk of having a miscarriage when you have it and is done for the purpose of identifying maladies of a child in the womb. Amniocentesis. A test done to discover whether or not the fetus being carried has genetic abnormalities before it is a living creature, before it is anything other than a mass of cells, at which point the woman, the man involved, if there is one involved, can make a decision. Do we want this mass of undifferentiated cells to continue to develop to the point where we would give birth in a manner that we choose not to? Are we forced to do this? The law says, no, you're not. You can make a decision. Common sense says you can make a decision. Privacy says you can make a decision. Rick Santorum says, shut up. You have no decision. You have no decision. This is God's gift to you. At a different time, a different place, Rick, this was called God's curse to you. Which is it, buddy? Or is it possibly neither? Is it a fact of biology? Never mind. And then Santorum says, in many cases, and in fact in most cases, most physicians recommend, if there is a problem, they recommend abortion. Is that true? Or does a physician leave? How does Santorum know this? Don't most physicians provide the medical facts, the biological facts of what's going on with the development of this, up to this point, parasitical mass of cells? Does not the physician take a look and say, okay, it's X, Y, Z. What you do about it is your choice. Is Santorum right? Do physicians sit in their offices and say, listen, I recommend you have an abortion? Or is Santorum, like most of these Christer politicians, lying through his teeth in order to make a point that Barack Obama, as you see, now keep in mind, this all ties back to Obama's Affordable Health Care Act. Keep that in mind. This is all about Barack Obama being a murderer of unborn babies. That's what this is about. Obama is not being challenged for the presidency based on his policies, although they pay lip service to that. He's being challenged because he subscribes to a false religion, because he is immoral, because he murders babies, because he culls the herd. Of what Santorum would refer to as disabled people, This is why Obama's being challenged by these things that pass themselves off as males, white, Christian politicians. It's, again, it is fairly mind-blowing to me that our political system has degenerated to the point where a Rick Santorum can be seriously considered as a viable candidate for president. And yet, here we are. Here we are. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.